From NPR News in New York, this is the Bryant Park Project with Allison Stewart and Luke Burbank.
Hey, everybody, get ready for 60 minutes of news, information, and good, clean fun, and not so clean fun. We'll explain that part in just a minute. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. I'm Allison Stewart in New York.
I'm Luke Burbank in Chicago. Allie, it is supposed to be 97 degrees here today. It is really, really showing why people love Chicago, but probably don't want to live here, at least in the summertime. And I have this deodorant that I wear.
Yeah.
That's like super, it's really, really, really strong, so you do not ever sweat under your arm.
Ever?
But yet, not within a few days of putting it on. It's almost like it should be prescription strength. It's unbelievable. But yesterday, it was so hot as I was walking home that my elbows started sweating.
Oh, you're going to have to do a full body application soon.
It's just that my body is so freaked out by the fact that it can't sweat from the armpit, that it's starting to sweat from other random places like my elbow and the palm of my hand.
Well, you might decide to stay in Chicago when I explain the bathroom situation to you here at NPR, that they are renovating the bathrooms on the 19th floor, so you literally have to take the key, go down two floors to the 15th floor, hang a left, just to use the loo. So there's no last minute, because you know how New York City elevator banks are. So I'm just warning you, when you head back to New York, plan accordingly.
The bathroom situation at the NPR Bureau in New York is already a complete disaster. We have like one key for like a 30-person staff. And also, by the way, who's trying to break into our building past the security guards on the ground floor up to the 19th floor so they can sneak into our crappy bathroom?
Well, the answer could be somebody. Here's what's on today's show, everybody.
This is the state-of-the-art in-flight entertainment system not available on any other plane in America today.
Okay, that is the head of in-flight entertainment, the director of it for a new airline, Virgin America. It takes off a week from today, and it is just tricked out with every kind of technological need you could need in the skies. We're going to talk to Ryan Block from Engadget.com, who actually has been on one of these new tricked-out planes, and we'll ask him if it lives up to the hype.
We're also going to talk about Alberto Gonzalez, which we should just start blocking out, 20 minutes of every show for Alberto Gonzalez talk, because it seems like it's just been going on forever and ever. But he is somehow in, it would seem, more hot water than ever before. We're going to talk to a guy named Michael Gerhardt at the University of North Carolina School of Law to sort of find out, is this par for the course when you're talking about Congress fighting with attorney generals, or have we gone to a whole new level of acrimony?
And there's going to be an airwave auction, believe it or not. I can't see them, but apparently people want them. People from Google, AT&T, and Verizon, the FCC, is setting rules about this auction. We're going to explain to you what it means for you. Actually, we're not going to, but NPR's own Adam Davidson, who is much smarter on matters like this, is going to join us to explain this whole wireless airwave auction.
Yeah, and there's a big giant to-do on Capitol Hill today over Pat Tillman. He was, of course, the pro football player who left it all to serve in the military and then got killed in Afghanistan. Don Rumsfeld, who hasn't been seen on Capitol Hill, at least in an official sense, since he was sort of booted, was back on the Hill today talking about what people knew and when they knew it, if there was a cover-up in terms of telling people how Pat Tillman died. We're actually going to hear a little bit more about that in the newscast coming up.
First, let's start with a big story of the day and what you need to know about it. Rupert Murdoch's News Corp will purchase Dow Jones Company, owner of the Wall Street Journal, for $5.6 billion. That took months to convince the Dow's primary shareholders and owners, and years to orchestrate the entire plan, which is a little tiny bit of time considering the Bancroft family, who has owned Dow Jones for more than a century, and it has held to a certain standard, shall we say. Murdoch owns Fox News and the New York Post. Both have a certain standard as well.
Yeah, you forget Howard Stern, Allie. Rupert Murdoch is now the king of all media. He's got TV networks in the UK and Australia and even in China. And of course, he's got his newspapers. He's getting ready to launch the Fox Business Channel, which is pretty interesting because he can probably use the Wall Street Journal as a way to kind of promote his new TV channel, which is exactly what he did when he bought Fox Broadcasting a long time ago. He then went and bought TV Guide magazine and then basically used TV Guide to promote Fox programming, you know, to pretty great success. So Rupert has been working on this for a long time. He's pretty stoked. Others are sort of leery. NPR's David Folkenflik, he talked to a guy named Norman Perlstein, who was the Journal's top editor for 9 years. Here's what he said.
The alternatives for Dow Jones and the Journal were not so great. So on balance, the idea of an owner who wants to invest in and reinvigorate a product is something we should be encouraged about.
Yet Perlstein adds this caveat.
We have to be wary about whether his record of frequently using his publications for the interest of News Corp is something that's going to have to be watched.
You know, some of the current reporters are a lot more skeptical. An unnamed Journal reporter told the New York Times, and I quote, "We held a wake, we stood around a pile of journals and drank whiskey."
I think we call that Tuesday on the
DPP. Now, a named reporter by the name of Joshua Prager of the Journal also expressed his concern to NPR's Folkenflik.
For years, it seemed that there were other principles than just money that were sort of governing and guiding the stewardship of this paper.
Prager points to the winning gambit this week when News Corp agreed to pay an estimated $30 million in fees generated by the Bancroft's lawyers, analysts, and other consultants.
That payment was, for many people, sort of emblematic of one bitter truth, that it all comes down to money. And it really, really left a bitter taste in people's mouths.
That was the thing that kind of blew me away, Allison, was there was so much talk leading up to this about trying to protect the Wall Street Journal's sort of editorial policy.
Or its independence as well.
Its independence, exactly. That to make sure that Rupert Murdoch wouldn't be able to come in and sort of say, here's what I want you to cover, or I want you to promote my other companies. And the Bancroft family was, at least some of them, were supposedly going to be the people that made Rupert Murdoch give them this ironclad promise and some special system so that he couldn't do that. And I looked at what the actual system is. It's a board of five people, half of them approved by Murdoch. Well, maybe two and a half of them approved by Murdoch and two and a half of them approved by the Bancroft family, who can overrule Murdoch on certain hires. But that doesn't exactly sound like a huge firewall to me.
It doesn't exactly at all. And considering the launch of the Fox Business Channel in the fall, we shall see. We should also see about some of the other top stories of the day. We have NPR's Matt Martinez with the news.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, everyone. Here are some of the latest headlines. Former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld was on Capitol Hill today, testifying in a congressional inquiry into the death of Army Corporal Pat Tillman. The testimony comes after the Army laid most of the blame on retired three-star General Philip Kinzinger. The Army censured Kinzinger for a failure of leadership and said he lied to investigators probing the aftermath of Tillman's death. For 5 weeks, the Army knew Tillman was accidentally killed by his fellow Army Rangers, but they said publicly that he died in a firefight with enemy militia. The Army says there was no intentional Pentagon cover-up. Three large bombs went off in Baghdad today, killing at least 70 people. The largest blast killed around 50 people and wounded at least 60 when a truck bomb exploded near a filling station in West Baghdad. Meanwhile, U.S. military officials say there has been a drop in troop deaths in July. They say it's because their new military strategy is beginning to work. The House voted yesterday to require lawmakers to disclose more details of their bids to fund pet projects as well as their fundraising help from lobbyists. The new legislation passed 4-11-8 and now goes to the Senate. Details in the bill, it would require House and Senate members to disclose which lobbyists raise $15,000 or more for them within a six-month period by bundling donations from many people. The bill would also bar lobbyists and their clients from giving gifts, including meals and tickets, to lawmakers. The United Nations Security Council approved a 26,000-strong peacekeeping force into the Darfur region of Sudan. The region has suffered years of war and genocide. If fully deployed, the force would be the world's largest peacekeeping operation. France, Denmark, and Indonesia today offered to contribute to the mission, which will be made up mostly of peacekeepers from Africa. And the Barry Bonds saga continues. The Giants outfielder failed to homer last night in Los Angeles. The Giants beat the Dodgers Dodgers 3-1. Bonds will continue his quest for the all-time home run record again in Los Angeles. He is one swing away from tying Hank Aaron's mark of 755 homers. More on what it means if Bonds breaks the record in Los Angeles coming up later on in the program. And there's the music, which means I got to go away. Matt Martinez, remember the news is always online at NPR.org. Back to you, Luke and Allison.
All right, we all know the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, has some control over what you see or you hear, monitoring cuss words or Janet Jackson's boobs. But the FCC also has controls on how you get that information. And yesterday, it made a decision about some soon-to-be-available wireless frequencies, the kind for your cell phone or your Wi-Fi uses, and some really big companies want in. Here to break it all down for us is our friend Adam Davidson. The bigwigs call him NPR's international business and economics reporter. But at the BPP, we like to call him the guy who explains economic and business stuff we don't really get. Hi, Adam. Welcome back.
Hey, Allison.
So these frequencies, which are going to become available, I've been thinking about them kind of like real estate. So why is this real estate, these frequencies, so desirable? I mean, what can a company do with it?
Well, if whether or not they are real estate really is the $4 billion, $30 billion question. That's a really huge existential issue about these frequencies. But the basic idea is, you know, there's different frequencies that you can transfer basically information, whether it's TV channels or cell phone calls or Wi-Fi internet or radio that exist. And if the government didn't step in, at least this is what the government says, it would just be a crazy free-for-all and you wouldn't be able to listen to the radio or get the internet or watch TV because no one would know which frequency goes to which company or which station or which use or whatever. So so the government controls these airwave frequencies and sells them basically to companies that then use them for different purposes. Now, for a very long time, as long as analog TV has been around, there's been these analog TV channels. Those are now disappearing because analog TV in a couple years will no longer exist and we'll all have digital TV. That frees up a huge amount of frequencies, and now the government is trying to figure out how to sell them and who gets them.
All right, but Google is one of the people who wants these newly available frequencies, and they dangled a pretty pricey potential bid, about $4 billion, is that right?
Well, here's the thing. Yes, Google said we'll pay $4.6 billion.
Why does Google?
They don't want them, though.
They don't want them. What?
This is a trick.
A trick?
And maybe it's a good trick. Maybe it's a bad trick. That's kind of the controversy. But basically, what Google wants, I kind of think of it as like two totally different visions of the future of how the world will work. What Google wants.
Not to overstate it.
But I think about Google versus AT&T or Google versus Verizon. If you're AT&T or Verizon, the way you make money is, well, frankly, limiting choice. You have to buy an AT&T phone and be on the AT&T network. And what AT&T wants is if you want to watch a TV show, they get a nickel somehow. You have to go through the AT&T proprietary system and they're controlling your choice, as opposed to Google's vision, where it's just wide open, Wild West, much like the internet is. Like, think of internet versus television, where you're either, you know,
Google's got to get something out of it. They're not just philanthropists just wanting to give away.
Oh, they're not going to pay a dime. They're not going to give any money away. What they're saying is they're telling the government, we want you to change the rules. We know that we're not going to win this spectrum auction because the spectrum, it's worth far more than $4.6 billion, probably $10, $20, $30 billion. And so what Google's saying, we're not going to win it. It's going to be AT&T or Verizon or one of those guys is going to spend the $30 billion. But we want the government to make the rules such that it's wide open. AT&T cannot control what devices connect to the wireless network. AT&T cannot control what software is used. It'll be wide open. Because the way Google works is it wants a wild, chaotic, crazy internet-type environment.
Why?
Where Google is the tool you use to find what you want. And so if you think 10, 20 years from now, when there really isn't radio anymore the way we think of it, there isn't TV, there aren't phones, there's just...
Except the Bryant Park Project, which will be
The Bryant Park
forever.
Project will be very strong in this new universe because you're wild and out
so
of control.
So Google kind of becomes the gatekeeper, the entry door into the
or
wild,
the tool
wild
to help you find what you need. So if you want to call your friend, somehow you use Google. If you want to find a movie to watch, you use Google. Whereas AT&T wants to control it in a different way. They want you to go to the AT&T device that connects to the AT&T network that has a proprietary deal with, you know, Paramount Pictures, and you pay to see such and such, you know, pay to see whatever movie. So Google wants open, wild, crazy. AT&T, Verizon want closed, no choice. The way Google got the FCC to at least change some of the rules is by saying, look, we will pay at least $4.6 billion, but they're not going to have to pay the money. That's the trick.
But all of this is moot until 2009, right? Because that's when the frequencies become
available?
Well,
the auction will be in January, okay. and then they'll actually be able to start using the wireless spectrum in 2009.
We shall see. I'm sure we'll talk to you about it again. Adam Davidson, NPR's international business and economics correspondent. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
Joining us from our Brooklyn bureau.
Otherwise known as his living room, I think.
Yeah,
is that right?
I think so. Exactly.
Busted. Adam's in his socks in his living room.
All right. Coming up, we're going to talk to a law school professor who's going to tell us if any attorney general has ever gotten the congressional beatdown that Alberto Gonzalez has been getting lately.
Now, you may have heard about these two news choppers that crashed over Phoenix while they were covering a car chase. Is it surprising that this hasn't happened before? A lot of people are asking, are the risks worth the ratings for the stations and the news buzz from watching one of all these real-life dramas?
And we've got some sexy, sexy news out of Nevada. I mean, really, is there any other kind? A federal judge there struck down a ban on brothel
Harry
advertising.
Harry Reid's not sexy. Sorry.
Listen, he's one of my top five sexiest Mormons who are in leadership in the Senate. It's a small list, really. He's the only one. But the brothels are now allowed to advertise in the state of Nevada, and we asked one of New York's top ad firms to come up with some pitches, so we're going to share those results.
This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. I'm Allison Stewart-Luke. I'm very excited to tell you about this new Fancy Pants airliner. It's coming up a little later on.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. We're also going to do the ramble. First, though, this is not a good time to be Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Yesterday, House Democrats introduced a bill looking into impeaching him. And then last week, he was in front of a Senate committee, which was it was pretty amazing to watch.
I heard somebody refer to him as a piñata. in front of the committee, which I couldn't decide if it was vaguely racist or not, but considering what you do to a piñata.
That was me on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, that was you, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was trying not to out you, dude.
How meta was that? You know, we had a really long conversation in our editorial meeting if that was racist, and I said, I don't know, we'll try it and see where it goes. And now it's part of the permanent record. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, he was, though. He seriously was getting the business from these senators. Just listen, this is what Democrat Pat Leahy said to Berto. This was as he stared into his eyes in front of all the world and C-SPAN.
I don't trust you.
Awkward. By the way, it wasn't just Democrats that were mad at Mr. Gonzalez. Here's Pennsylvania Republican Arlen Specter. This is him mixing it up with Gonzalez at the same hearing.
Senator, I am not going to answer that question. Again, you're talking about asking me questions about a matter in which I am recused. I'm not going to answer that question.
Well, let's see if somewhere, somehow we can find a question you'll answer.
Oh, gosh. They were just like openly mocking him. And I guess we were sort of wondering, is this how these things usually go? And we thought we would ask somebody who's actually spent more time than us looking at the history of this kind of stuff. It's Michael Gerhart, professor of constitutional law at the University of North Carolina School of Law. Hi there, professor.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for coming on the Bryant Park Project.
My pleasure.
So we're kind of wondering is this normal or is this a new level of disgust kind of coming from senators towards the attorney general?
Well, it's certainly not usual, and it's somewhat unprecedented. So I don't know if it's the worst ever, but it's certainly not a good place to be if you're the Attorney General of the United States.
Okay, so for those who don't know or maybe don't care, what exactly did Gonzalez do to sort of make, or at least allegedly do, to make Congress so angry?
I think there are a couple things that have happened that have cost him some credibility with the Congress. One, I think, is just what appears to be a very poor memory or perhaps, you know, some prevarication or lying about the extent to which he was involved in the firings of the United States attorney. So that's one area about which he just simply has not been clear. He hasn't answered questions.
And these were U.S. attorneys who fired, some would say, because they were pursuing policies counter to the Bush administration or not doing the Bush administration's bidding. And this has been kind of a big scandal.
Right. The president gets to nominate the United States attorneys. The Senate confirms them. Typically, they're not replaced unless they actually engage in some kind of misconduct. And obviously what's happened here is that there's some suspicion that there were some U.S. attorneys removed not because of misconduct, but because they weren't doing enough, perhaps in a partisan direction.
What about the wiretap stuff?
Yeah, and then there's another area about which the Attorney General has both been not clear or perhaps been worse than that, and that is the extent to which he might have been trying to pressure the Attorney General of the United States while he was sitting in a sick bed. This is back when Gonzalez was working in the White House. He came to the hospital where Attorney General Ashcroft was sick, and Gonzalez has suggested something along the lines that he was just there to kind of notify him about what was happening. Other witnesses suggest he, in fact, was there to pressure a sick man, in fact, to authorize a program that man, Ashcroft, didn't want to authorize. In fact, Ashcroft had authorized somebody else, James Comey, to be the acting attorney general while Ashcroft was in the hospital. So what we've got is Gonzalez either with an incredibly poor memory or perhaps misrepresenting or misleading Congress about what was really happening with respect to certain events that Congress is trying to investigate.
Professor Gerhart, can I jump in and ask you one question? You keep saying he either has a poor memory or he may be lying or not telling the truth. He completely keeps saying, I don't recall, I don't remember. Is there some legalese in I don't recall which can get you out of trouble down the line?
I don't know if that's legalese, but I think it's just it's a way, I suppose, one could try to avoid any problem, because if you say you don't recall, you're not actually denying something, nor are you admitting it. You're just basically, you know, saying that you just don't remember enough to be able to say what happened or what you did. And that sounds like it might get you out of trouble. But the problem here is that the Attorney General seems to not recall a great deal about two relatively controversial matters over which he had ultimate responsibility.
It's amazing to think that when we did our first show of the Bryant Park Project, it wasn't even a show. This was the thing to decide if there should be a show. This was a year and a half ago. The main story we did was how Alberto Gonzalez was on Capitol Hill getting grilled. This has been, like, how long can this go on, basically, is my question.
Well, my guess is it can go on at least until the time that President Bush leaves office. I mean, it's clear that President Bush is not going to remove him. He seems to like to have the Attorney General where he is. But Attorney General Gonzalez, I guess, serves one purpose, and that is he kind of diverts attention from other people, and he seems to be able to at least not be too bothered by the fact that Congress holds him in some contempt.
Just a quick question as we wrap up, Professor. What's the atmosphere at the Justice Department now? That's, of course, what Gonzalez runs, and can he do his job there? Or people, they're just openly disobedient because they're like, you know, you're not going to be here long.
Well, I think that's a great question. And my understanding is that the morale in the Justice Department is very, very low. There was somebody who wrote a piece not too long ago in the newspaper, somebody who had worked there at the time of Watergate, and said that even the spirits were higher then than they are now, that people are more demoralized now than they were then. I think that, in fact, it's dispiriting to people in the Justice Department, particularly career people, to see the Attorney General of the United States either being incredibly incompetent because he just can't recall so much, or perhaps lying. I mean, those seem to be one of the two options. Either he's just not very good at his job, or he may be lying.
Well, we'll see what happens, and we'll see if they drag him back up on Capitol Hill for another pinata session. I said it, Allison.
There, I heard you.
I said it. Professor Michael Gerhardt from the University of North Carolina School of Law, thank you for coming on the Bryant Park Project.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
News of a police chase on I-270.
We go now to Fox 2's Sean Conroy, who's live in Sky Fox. And Sean, we understand this may have possibly have started after a shooting. What can you tell us?
Yeah, shooting in Frontenac, Sandy. Best we can tell, he's headed now. We can definitely tell he's headed eastbound on 40 at a very fast clip.
That is audio of a car chase. I often call car chases the empty calories of TV news. What does a viewer really get from them? A sugary news high? A real reality show? You know, it's all fine and good until someone gets hurt or killed, and that is what happened last Friday in Phoenix during a chase as another helicopter pilot witnessed this.
Oh, God! Channel 15 and Channel 3 just had a mid-air collision. They're in the park. Oh, man.
Yesterday, 900 people gathered at a memorial service for two of the four people killed in that helicopter accident. So was there a big outcry, no more car chases and helicopters in the sky, filming it and putting it on the local and cable news? No. Monday, during our editorial meeting, I happened to be surfing through the channels. I was listening, however, but I saw between 2:30 and 3 p.m., Luke, two out of the three cable networks followed a high-speed chase all the way through the streets of Dallas.
I have to say, though, Allison, I mean, I know you are probably not a fan, but if you see one, are you able to turn off a car chase if you're watching it?
Well, I have to tell you, truthfully, car chases mean ratings spikes for networks. It is undeniable. When you get stuck in the middle of one as a reporter, as happened to me often, with one piece of information, and you get in your ear, you hear this in your ear, keep going. Stay on it. We're with it. And they've all you know is that there is a truck with a person who stole it in downtown Miami. And that is all you have to go on. And you hear in your earpiece, stay on it. We're staying with it. Go it. Because people watch. That's the bottom line. So this
I'm
is one of those
them.
Chicken
I'm
and the egg
them.
Syndromes. People say, oh, they're horrible car chases. You shouldn't watch them on TV. There's no news value. Yet people sit and watch them. Luke?
Yeah, I have to say, I'm sorry, I'm one of them. I'm one of them. Having lived in L.A., when one of those things comes on, I'm with it. I'll watch it when the car stops. The guy will get out. He'll go into the Quickie Mart and get a Slurpee and come back. I'm riveted. So I guess I'm the mouth-breathing American viewer who drives this coverage. Sorry.
It's sort of amazing to think, though, that, you know, this was the first incident of two news choppers colliding while covering a story. That's according to the Radio Television News Director Association in Washington, D.C. Now, I know you lived in L.A. for a while, and I've heard anecdotally you can look up in the sky and see three, four, five choppers around a scene at once. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. Well, part of it is that the LAPD has a huge fleet of choppers itself because it's such a big place to try to cover. So those guys are out moving around. But then you've also got these news helicopters that are just like following right behind. They're like dragonflies mating. They just sort of fly around, you know, and it's, I mean, it's kind of fun to watch, but it's all, it is amazing to think that that they're flying as close together as they are and that they don't crash. Like, that was the thing that went through my mind when we heard about this thing in Arizona was, yeah, why hasn't that happened, like, a lot?
And it's interesting. This is a little tidbit for news viewers. You'll notice they happen at certain times of the day. They happen around the noon newscast and around the 5 o'clock newscast because that's when the helicopters are actually in the air doing traffic, and then they'll get a call that there's some sort of car chase going on. And it becomes an issue also, an economic issue. How long do we keep the chopper up? Those things eat a lot of fuel. So sometimes how long you watch a car chase, or I should say how long you see a car chase, or how long a local stays with a car chase, depends on the economics of the situation as much as the choice, the news value of it all. Hey, if you have an opinion on this, we would love it if you email us at bryantpark@npr.org. You can always go to our blog and post a comment while you're listening to this. What do you think of car chases? Good news or not good for us?
Hey, coming up, we're going to head over to Chavez Ravine. It's where the LA Dodgers play, if you don't know. It's also the one place that Barry Bonds probably does not want to break Hank Aaron's home run record. This is because people hate him over there. Of course, that's exactly where Barry Bonds is playing this week. So we're going to talk to a hardcore fan.
I would not want to be an empty beer cup at the stadium if that happens. We do want to get to some of the headlines that we're following at this hour. We are keeping up with the news. Rupert Murdoch finally got his mitts on the Wall Street Journal last night. The board of Dow Jones approved his $5 billion takeover offer.
Donald Rumsfeld's on Capitol Hill today testifying over the death of Army Corporal Pat Tillman. Tillman's death was first categorized by the military as being from enemy fire. Turns out he was actually shot by U.S. troops. The House Oversight and Government Reform Committee is trying to determine who in the Pentagon knew what about Tillman and when they knew it.
And now, there are a lot of stories out there that are worth an honorable mention. Maybe not necessarily newscast worthy, but you know you're going to talk about them anyway. Mm-hmm. So this is when Luke and I like to take a little ramble. Shall we, Luke?
Yes, we shall.
All right, this one. Why do people study this stuff? Out of the University of Texas, they did a study on why people have sex and came up with 237 reasons why. Number one, I was attracted to the person. That's a big shocker. College students having sex because they're attracted to the other person. Number two, I had a lot of beer. No, that's not right. I made that up. But it is noteworthy that men and women had very similar reasons for having sex, so refuting any kind of stereotype or caveman-like thinking.
Well, you know, you ask, why do they study that? If you could grow a mouse ear on the back of a giraffe, or you could ask people about having sex, what are you going to do, Allison? I'm going for the sex survey. Star Jones Reynolds, speaking of sexy, Star Jones Reynolds has acknowledged that she had gastric bypass surgery. This is like an update from the desk of stuff everyone totally knew.
Yeah.
I mean, she
the news network.
Yeah, she lost an entire Barbara Walters in the course of like 3 months, and then suddenly she's like, no, it was Pilates. Yeah, right. Was there a chicken wing on the Pilates machine you were reaching for?
All right, the DeLoreans are making a comeback thanks largely to a big fan of the car and, of course, the movie Back to the Future.
Marty!
yeah. The last DeLorean rolled off the assembly line in Northern Ireland back in 1982. Now, there's still 6,500 of them on the road, and DeLorean Motor Company in California plans to make 20 new ones per year. John DeLorean, not with us to enjoy it.
No.
Though.
No, yeah. I know. I just saw Back to the Future, like 8, on TV the other day, and I thought, that DeLorean, that's an awesome ride. Barry Bonds, as we mentioned a minute ago, is in L.A. tonight playing the Dodgers, and he is still one home run shy of tying Hank Aaron's all-time record. Now, the Giants and the Dodgers, you really are not going to find two baseball teams that hate each other a lot more than do these two guys. So it's kind of amazing that Barry Bonds would be going after the record in Dodger Stadium, which is really kind of the lion's den. Speaking of lions, a guy named Jonathan Kitchaven is the blogger behind a blog called Lion in Oil. Covers LA sports and other things. And Jonathan is on the line with us now. Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having
Jonathan,
me
on. I said your name wrong. Say your last name because it's killing me.
Kitchaven.
Kitchaven. All right. Can I just, this is totally beside the point, but what does lion in oil mean?
Yeah, it's just a palindrome, to be honest. It's just the same frontwards and backwards, and we just sort of needed a name when we were starting up the blog, and that's how we picked it.
All right. Well, describe the feeling for people who have never been to Dodger Stadium, certainly on a game when Barry Bonds is playing. Describe the feeling in the outfield when Barry Bonds comes to the plate, when Barry Bonds is actually playing in the field.
Well, Dodger Stadium is just, you know, a beautiful place to see a game, but you gotta understand that in the outfield they're just about the cheapest seats in the park, so you get the true fan out there. And I think that this was last night. You could see, I was watching on TV. You could see it and hear it. I mean, the chant Barry sucks and everything. I mean, it really seemed like a great place to be, and the rivalry that goes back years and years really inflames that even more.
By true, you mean drunk fans. One of the things that people don't understand, they think L.A. is really laid back because they see, famous movie stars at the Lakers games just sitting around. But the Dodger Stadium vibe is totally different. It's a much rougher place.
Yeah, you're totally right. And, over the years, they've had trouble with fans getting in fights, and you still see those to this day. And it's really, especially when the Giants come to town, it can be a real intense place to see a game.
Do you think there's any chance this will actually make Barry Bonds play better? Because he seems to feed off of negative energy.
Yeah, I mean, he said in the past that he's really enjoyed playing at Dodger Stadium. I think he called it the greatest show that he can play in front of. And I think that, the hype and the circus behind Barry Bonds affects everyone. And the fans, the Dodgers players. You saw a number of errors last night in the game. As well, I'm sure it affects the Giants, his teammates who have to constantly be a part of this.
Jonathan Kitchaven, blogger behind Lion and Oil. Thank you for coming on the Bryant Park Project.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm very excited because ESPN is picking up all of these games on TV so I can watch them from the comfort of my hotel room in Chicago.
So we know where to find you, my friend.
Gives me a reason to live, sadly.
Coming up, a judge ruled that legal brothels in Nevada can now advertise. So we asked a top New York ad firm, to come up with a campaign slogan or two. We'll read you the pitches that we can.
And a new airline is set to debut in the U.S. Their planes have some sweet amenities, even in coach, which is what I fly, sadly. You get your own video screen, and the whole plane is actually networked, so you can play video games against the other passengers. And when you get hungry, you can order food through that video screen. They bring it right to you. So we're going to talk to a guy who's actually been on this plane, and we're going to find out if they're as awesome as they are supposed to be.
It sounds so Jetsons. This is Captain Elroy. We'll also bring our own Matt Martinez to help us play Make Me Care. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. Hey, everybody, I'm Allison Stewart.
I'm Luke Burbank, holding it down in the 312 in Chicago this week. Hey, coming up, we've got our own Matt Martinez. He's going to pop in to discuss the passing of talk show host Tom Snyder. He's going to help us care. He's going to help make us care about the late Tom Snyder.
And Luke, you are just a jet setter. You're flying to Seattle, flying to Chicago, flying all around. So, listen up. The story could be for you. In 1 week, on August 8th, a new airline We'll see if it can meet most of your tech needs at 30,000 feet, as well as provide a really gee whiz way to get your hands on an extra bag of roasted peanuts. Virgin America says it will offer each passenger a personal video screen. You're going to have your own USB port. There's either going to be an outlet for two per every three seats in the row. Don't know what the third guy's going to do. and whenever you're hungry, apparently you can just order the food right through your screen, a touch screen, and then somebody will just bring it to you.
That is the best idea ever, because the worst thing is when you're sitting on the window and you're really hungry, or let's say thirsty for an adult beverage, and they haven't come through or they're not coming through for a while. Do you ring the call button? That, to me, that's like the court of last resort. I never want to ring that you know, like, button for them.
You'll never have to again.
I know. This is made for me.
Let's listen to a little more of their pitch on what you can get.
This is the state-of-the-art in-flight entertainment system, not available on any other plane in America today. This screen here has all kinds of functionality. You can watch television, watch movies, watch videos. You can listen to music, make your own playlists. You can play games. You can talk to people in other seats. You can enter a chat room and talk to the whole airplane.
That was the CEO of Virgin America touting all these things that his airline can do. And now, on top of it, it claims to be low cost. Well, that's probably for now. Also, part of the big sale was to get some tastemakers on board to have the Virgin American experience. And in full disclosure, maybe partner up someday with the airlines. One of those folks to join was Ryan Block from Engadget.com. He got to check out the plane, and he joins us now. Hey, Ryan.
Hi, how are you guys?
Oh, I'm not hearing Ryan. Maybe Luke's hearing Ryan.
I'm hearing Ryan just fine here in Chicago because of the vagaries. Should I just repeat everything he says to you, Allison?
Hey, Ryan, it's Allison. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, we should get the people from Virgin America in here. I bet they'd be able to hook us up. Hey, Ryan, when you first got on the plane, what struck you immediately when you thought, this is the greatest thing ever?
Well, I think the mood lighting is actually the thing that people probably first notice. They actually have LED-based mood lighting throughout the cabin, and they can change the colors from purple to blue to orange to basically whatever they want. And they actually do that contextually. So depending on where you're flying, what time you're flying, you know, all of these different things that might factor into how people's moods might be, they can basically change lighting to affect that.
So you mean if the passengers get a little bit rowdy, and it's like nap time, you just put the nap time lighting on?
Exactly, yeah.
Now, or you turn the lights up like when they kick you out of the bar, like last call. You just make the plane blindingly bright.
Right, exactly. It's like a movie theater.
Of all the things that you experienced, Ryan, there was the seat-to-seat video, the movie libraries, the seat massager if you pop for first class. Tell me, what turned out to be simply just really lame, just hype?
Well, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard to say because of all the stuff that I tested, you know, this when I got to check out the Virgin America Airbus A320, it was grounded in San Francisco, and they did not yet have authorization to fly, and that only just happened in the last couple of weeks. So I didn't get to give it, you know, a really full going over. I mean, everything there, you know, it seemed like a fairly standard plane, you know, fairly standard experience with a lot of add-ons and niceties that I think people will really get used to very quickly.
Are the gadgets user-friendly, or am I going to have to listen to some lady 2-3 seats behind me going, I can't find Oprah on Channel 7?
I mean, I think anyone who's ever used an in-flight entertainment system like on JetBlue or on Delta Song, I mean, they're very simple. I mean, it's all touchscreen-based, and you just kind of pick your channel and go, or you know, you can go back to the home menu, and if you want to go into a chat room, you can do that, or play some games, or buy some food through the interface. You can do that too. It's fairly simple and intuitive.
Did they explain it all? Will there be an IT guy on board should this thing go down? Because if you're buying this ticket because you're thinking you get all this stuff, and then all of a sudden it doesn't work, or are the flight attendants going to handle that? Did they explain that at all?
You know, they didn't really explain that. What they did explain was that the in-flight computer system is based on Linux, and that may not mean a lot to some of your listeners, but basically it's like a really super solid computer system that almost never goes down. So, I mean, you know, sometimes it will, sometimes it won't. I did actually ask specifically, does the in-flight entertainment network have anything to do with the avionics or, you know, systems controls for the actual jet, and they're completely isolated. The network, the power, all that stuff has absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the plane. So if in, you know, some emergency happens with everybody's TV goes out or they can't, you know, go in the chat room, it's not going to affect the pilots in any way.
That's good to know. I also wondered, this is kind of gross, since they're touch screens, was there any sort of sanitary issues? Is there going to be Purell in each seat or something? That kind of grossed me out, the idea that I'm going to be touching the same screen over and over again that the guy before me.
Well, you know, I mean, airlines like JetBlue have had this in their seats for many years, and I don't think it's really too much of a problem. I'm sure they go through and, you know, do a quick wipe.
You ride the subway, Allison.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, if you're kind of a germaphobe, you probably are constantly wiping your hands and the surfaces you're touching anyway.
Ryan Black from Engadget.com, thanks for sharing your Virgin America experience with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Allison, you know where I like to fly on airplanes?
Viva Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as if Las Vegas wasn't, you know, tawdry enough, a federal judge recently struck down a law that was banning brothels from advertising in Las Vegas, which also raised the question for me, what were all those billboards that had scantily clad women on them? What were those for, something else?
They're croupiers, don't you know?
Apparently so, because I was amazed to find out that this was not legal in Vegas. So apparently it wasn't, but now it is. Of course, having dirty minds, we immediately had like 50 potential taglines that we came up with for these brothels to use in their advertisement, but they were not very good. So we decided to turn it over to the professionals. We called DiMassimo and Goldstein. It's a New York advertising firm, and we put them on the case. Joining us now is Mark DiMassimo. Mark, am I saying that right?
Mark DiMassimo, you got it.
Gosh, I'm having serious last name issues on this show. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Mark DiMassimo, you're the firm's creative director.
That is correct.
So can you give us your top five that you guys came up with, ads that brothels can use now when advertising in Las Vegas?
Absolutely. Well, you know, when we first started to think about it, you know, we were just thinking about Las Vegas. So I'll try a few on you here. What happens here stays here. And what doesn't stay here can usually be cleared up with a little penicillin.
That's good. Those are words to live by, I think, just in regular life.
Clean, legal, healthy, filthy, dirty girls.
Clear, concise, let you know what the product is.
How about really iconic, just do me?
Oh, man.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Wait about what? Well, I'll tell you one that you left off, but I thought was pretty strong, was we'll leave the red light on for you.
Oh, I was just about to read that. Yeah, we'll leave the red light on for you. Absolutely.
All right. So these are
your odds are always very good here.
That's
what about I came up with one that I think is pretty direct, but I think kind of says what they want. These women will have sex with you for money.
You know what? I like that. But what's the problem here? And the opportunity for an advertising agency, I mean, this is an amazing opportunity because brothel advertising is in its infancy. I mean, right now they're just
pioneers.
Basically saying, we're here and we'll have sex with you, right? I mean, it seems like it sells itself, but what happens is that there's going to be a lot of competition. So, I mean, I think that they're going to have to position themselves. So some will be the young ones. Yeah, yes, exactly. Right. Our position is whatever position you want. That could be a good one. But, yeah, there'll be the family-friendly ones. Then there'll be the, you know, really, really, really dirty ones. And I'm sure they'll find I think an educational brothel would be awesome.
I noticed on your website, Mark, that you guys have done work for Detrol, which is a drug that makes you pee less often.
That is correct.
I mean, I know that this wasn't a Detrol campaign, but did you guys have a good time coming up with these? It sounds like it.
Oh, it's great. I mean, we love doing advertising in the bathroom. And just imagine Detrol and Viagra, two Pfizer drugs together in a cocktail. You can go all night without having to pee.
Two great tastes that taste great together. Mark, thank you again. Mark DiMassimo is the creative director at DiMassimo Goldstein in New York.
Thank you.
Too bad this will never get on the actual pilot, but it was really fun having you here.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Matt Martinez with these news headlines. How do you go after that? Oh, goodness gracious. Here are some of the top headlines from NPR News. Rupert Murdoch and his News Corp are set to take over Dow Jones, the parent company of the Wall Street Journal. The deal comes after months of acrimony, but the company's board of directors voted last night to accept his $5 billion takeover offer. Former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld will be on Capitol Hill today testifying in a congressional inquiry into the death of Army Corporal Pat Tillman's death. The Army knew Tillman was accidentally killed by his fellow Army Rangers, but they said publicly he died in a firefight with enemy militia. The Army says there was no intentional Pentagon cover-up. Three large bombs went off in Baghdad today, killing at least 70 people. The largest blast killed at least 50 people and wounded around 60 when a truck bomb exploded near a filling station in West Baghdad. Meanwhile, U.S. Military officials say there has been a drop in troop deaths in July. They say it's because their new military strategy is working. And the United Nations Security Council has approved a 26,000 strong peacekeeping force in the Darfur region of Sudan. France, Denmark, and Indonesia offered to contribute to the mission, which will be made up mostly of peacekeepers from Africa. I'm Matt Martinez. You can get the news online all the time at npr.org. Back to you, Luke and Allison.
Not so fast, Matt Martinez. We need you for our next segment, Make Me Care.
Yeah.
Since our last webcast, the world has lost some great innovators. On Monday, movie director Ingmar Bergman passed away in his sleep at 89. The same day, another influential filmmaker, Michelangelo Antonioni, died. He was 94. And former San Francisco 49ers coach
Cut
Bill
down
Walsh
in the prime of life.
Lost a long battle with leukemia. Now, a television personality, a reporter, a radio host, 71-year-old Tom Snyder also died this week from leukemia as well. Now, for those of you who read that story and went, oh, that's sad, and just kept on going, stop. We ask you to take a minute to listen to NPR's Matt Martinez, who told us this week he loves Tom Snyder. Matt really cared about this story more than your average bear.
That's true.
Cared more about his contributions than probably most people who read the story. So, Matt, why did you want to take the next minute to make us care about the career of Tom Snyder?
Well, I'm gonna put a lot of this in the Make Me Care, but basically he's been a big part in shaping what I wanted to become as a journalist. Basically, a good conversationalist.
A white guy with a comb over.
You know, that was his real hair.
That was
all his hair. Just somebody who elevated conversation in the media. And so that's basically why I wanted to take the time.
All right, Matt, get your papers together. Okay. I can see you right there.
Yes, I got them.
You set? All right, Dan, set the clock if you would.
All right.
We're giving you 60 seconds. Matt Martinez, on the subject of Tom Snyder's career,
yes.
Make Me Care.
Okay, I discovered Tom Snyder late in his career and very early in mine. David Letterman moved to CBS. He gave Tom the 12:30 slot right after The Late Show. So I was in college, barely discovering this amazing guy. And he's a guy who pretty much did everything, TV news, reporting, radio, late night TV. And the thing about Tom Snyder and the real reason to care about him is that he elevated the level of conversation on TV, and not many people are doing what he did, and they should be doing it. He interviewed world leaders, movie stars, artists. He conducted an interview with Johnny Rotten of the Sex Pistols that has become famous because of its uncomfortableness. But the thing is, he never wavered in that interview, and he never wavered in any interview, and that was the beauty of Tom. He approached an interview with Johnny Rotten, Charles Manson, Bonnie Hunt in pretty much the same way, with this honest curiousness and with questioning that tried to draw a story from the person being interviewed. And he was wonderful to listen to. He could tell a story, and there aren't many people on TV or the radio, for that matter, who can do that without a teleprompter.
65 seconds, but since you're senior supervising producer of this program, we'll give you
I'm the boss of you guys. I can do whatever I want.
Hey, you've been listening to Tom Snyder clips all morning.
Yeah, I have, and I'm so sorry I don't have one here. But you know, you go to the YouTube, you type in the Tom Snyder, and you'll get it. You know, you'll get his.
You know what he was, and Matt, you made me care, but I'll admit that I sort of already cared.
Okay.
Tom Snyder was like your granddad on his coolest day.
Yeah,
you know, sitting there with a drink in one hand and just kind of having a very kind of low key but interesting conversation with someone. It was kind of Charlie Rose You know, but for a kind of wider audience because it was on network television. But I remember being a kid and the same thing, going like, wow, this guy's just sitting there in a chair talking to people.
And that's the thing. He could do that. He could just sit in a chair and he could talk for a half an hour. I mean, he would often get technical difficulties because he did his show live. He the one that I used to watch, the one that I came to Tom Snyder to, the late show on CBS, and it was simulcast on radio, and he did it live in Los Angeles at 9:30, and there would always be technical difficulties, and he would vamp for 20 minutes. And he would be so engaging in that 20 minutes.
That's the point. A lot of people can talk for 20 or 30 minutes. Not a lot of people can talk for 20 or 30 minutes and be interesting.
And be interesting. That was the beauty of Tom Snyder. He was a true broadcaster.
I think on this show, we need to try to get up to about 5 minutes of interesting. Let's build towards an hour.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be nice.
Matt Martinez, thanks for making us care. And for all the work you do, also thanks to Dan Pashman, Wynn Rosenfeld, and MJ Davis. Couldn't do it without them. This has been the Bryant Park Project from Emanoli. I'm sorry, Emanoli. Engineering today. I'm Allison Stewart.
Hey, and also we got Dr. Robert Newhouse here in Chicago, where I am holding it down. Thanks for listening, guys. And hey, tune in to Wait, Don't Tell Me this weekend, because I'm hosting.
Good luck, Luke.
For some reason. Thank you.